It's the TCS London City Marathon Sights and Sounds episode of An Irish Man Abroad. I'm Jarlath Regan, and like 49,000 other runners, I've been training and fundraising for months for this day. Sunday, April 21st, 2024, when we take to the streets of London and attempt to run 26.2 miles side by side. By my side all the way through the training was Steve Daly, and assigning the training plans and advice with Vinnie Mulvey and the goat herself, Sonia O'Sullivan. Let me take you on the ride with Sonia, Vinnie and Steve, and all the legends we encounter along the way. The time for talking is over. All that's left to do is run.
We all have a fantastic London Marathon if you are just
on. Yeah. It's like, comes a point where there's only so much you can say that, yeah, it's a call for action.
Yeah, I mean, that field that I was in, the Green Wave 4 that I was in, was full of people attempting world records. So we had a shit emoji in there, we had a rhinoceros, we had an aeroplane, a man dressed as a tap. We had two guys who were going to do it as a three-legged race. This is what was remarkable about this pen. You had these people, then you had some of the strongest.
So why were you in there? Why were you
exactly
in there?
What
why
the fuck were you am I doing in here? And I was asking myself the same question. I had put down 3:30 as the time that I wanted to run back when we had started out for this thing, and you're in this field with all these really amazing people, because they have to do a certain amount of training in the gear. If you want to go as a shit emoji to the London Marathon, I'm not saying you're going to have to run your track sessions as a piece of shit, but you're going to have to do some long runs to get used to that thing. But alongside those people, Sonia, there's also some of the best club runners in the country in there. Like, there's some dudes in there that look like they could run a couple of marathons that day. It's all very intimidating, but like you said, talk is cheap. It's time to go, and you can hear the horn go off in the background here, and off we go.
Mile day. That breeze is keeping everything civil.
I mean, mile one really has to be the sweet spot for every marathon. If every mile of the marathon felt like mile one, everyone would be doing it.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely the release of energy when you've been standing around there waiting to start and then finally you get to go. There's all this built up like tension, and it's like, okay, you can go now. It's like the balloon has been set free, and it just takes off into the distance, and nobody knows how it's actually going to go, in which direction it's going to go, what speed it's going to go. I suppose there will be some smart people in there who are trying to hold the reins and hold back as much as they can. But I think everybody would probably start off a little bit too fast.
Did you have any method back in the day in getting into your pace or holding back, or did the other runners just dictate what the pace was going to be?
Yeah, I mean, I think when I ran the first few marathons I ran, I don't think I really thought about it too much in that sense. I suppose when you're in a race, you're not as much focused on the time or the pace you're going, but just about the people around you and keeping up. And you know, you're surrounded by people who you believe that you can keep up with, that you can compete with.
So you know the characters more than the pace. You know, this is the person I need to be with.
Yeah, and a lot of those people would be more experienced marathon runners than I ever was. So I just had to go for it and trust that they knew what they were doing. I was just going to, get carried along at a decent pace.
Mile three is where I start to realize there's something wrong here. Get a little knee twang at this old little niggle that I had coming out of Cove, that Vinnie had stuck all the needles in during the week, and it, you know, felt pretty good. And you get that little twang, and all sorts of thoughts swim through your head. Did you ever have a moment like that where you had a plan and it went out the window in a very short space of time?
I'm sure I did at some point. But I think I was always more, I was always flexible with the plans, you know? Mm. And I expected that things would not go to plan. I think when you run a race, you can do all the planning and preparation in the world. But when you line up and you compete, then you have to be flexible and you have to be able to adapt to what goes on around you.
It seems right to bring Vinnie Mulvey in here now. If anyone knows what it's like to have your head going crazy on you in the middle of a race, it's you, Vinnie. When I described to you what was going on in my brain during this, could you relate to race experiences you've had?
Yeah, definitely can. First of all, I'm just going to say it's glad to be back on the show. I haven't been on it since January, believe it or not.
It's mad. It's been a while. We've missed you.
I will say, you know, if you had come to me last week and you didn't have a marathon that week, I would have really, I was kind of thinking, you know, I'd like to really go a lot harder than this today. Mm. But I thought you'd get away with it, you know, and I thought, and then you texted me the next day and you said, you know what, I think this feels good. Mm. You know, deep down you have that little niggle in the back of your mind and you're going, yeah, but this could come back, and I have a feeling it might, you know.
Yeah, well, I definitely, there is this awful lot of trying to convince yourself when you're injured, isn't there?
Oh yeah.
As you know, lot of it is trying to tell yourself, I think I'm okay, and trying to will that into existence. Suddenly in mile 4, there's big crowds around. These, you know what the London crowds are like. They're big. They're leaning over the barriers. Stephen Scullion said, just as a word of warning to the spectators, stop telling runners to smash it in the first 5 miles. Because that is what these London crowds are like. They cheer it on like it's a football match. And they're going, get going, go and get it, mate. Give it some. And you're like, I'm literally just trying to hold the horse down and just get going. But once I knew that this thing was clear pain in mile 5, I'm changing everything to try and adjust to that. Changing the cadence, changing the foot placement, changing my posture, trying anything. But starting to fear that the goose is cooked.
Pain when put my foot down on anything uneven, so I'm gonna have to really watch it from here. So it's a shooter and it's not a warmy uppy pain, so it's a management job here as far as I'm concerned. We're just gonna have to load up that newer fan and hope for the best as we head into kilometer 5.
You did tell us that at one point that you had a Berlin marathon where you knew from the get-go today wasn't the day.
Yeah, well, I think probably similar to you. I mean, 5 miles in is pretty early to be feeling this isn't going well. Yeah, I think going into Berlin in 2007, I think it was, so I was trying to get a qualifying time for the 2008 Olympics. But my training, I had kind of managed to do a lot of the training, but I think I was definitely carrying an injury the whole time, and it was getting the training done, but I wasn't really enjoying it. It was difficult. When it came to the crunch in the marathon, I just knew it wasn't happening. And I just disappeared into the underground. you know when you're kind of running along and you're hoping that the earth will open up and swallow you up, and then you're like, oh, there's an entrance to the underground.
The earth is open and there's a train down there.
And, you know, even though the crowds and the atmosphere in Berlin is really good, I think it was a little bit easier to exit the course than it is in London.
Let's get that heart rate, watch it plummet now.
Did you ever give yourself a stern talking to during a race, Sonny?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely would have. Yeah, you do talk, have a bit of self-talk or self-checking in with yourself when you're in a race sometimes, just to kind of get yourself back on track and reset yourself. I know when I ran New York one year, not the year I was trying to run fast, but another year I was running, and I got to 18 miles and I was like, asking myself the question, like, why am I doing this? You know, you didn't have to do this.
Really?
But you do manage. And it was a weird thing, but then I was kind of like, yeah, but, you know, why not? You're here now, you've got to get to the finish. And I think the self-talk that you give yourself is, listen, the only way is forward now. you can't go back.
I did have a wingman, and I do need to give Steve Daly a shout out here, because it was like having a coach on the course. He's not a qualified coach. He's not an elite athlete. He's a man, though, that ran the London Marathon many, many moons ago in a time of 5 hours 30. So whatever he ran today was going to be a PB. He was having the time of his life. I mean, he was hopping off the track. He was singing and dancing along with every band that was on the side of the track. And this was probably the toughest part for him. He kept turning to me and going, "I'm having a great time." And then he'd go, "I feel terrible that you're in so much pain, but I'm having a great time out here." He was the one that said, "Look, let's just get to 10 miles and then see how you're doing." I'm literally picking out faces in the crowd. Steve said, "Just focus on that happiness and let that be your happiness.
Yeah.
Let's get to 10 miles and make a decision." And I wondered if you had had that experience of picking out people in the crowd during your New York marathon where things went awry.
Yeah, I still have those people's faces. And that's, God, 19 years ago. You know, and I still can see... I've people all over the course, but I've an image of these people in Harlem leaning out of their stairwells, and they were yelling, you know, "Come on, man, keep it going, no walking," you know, and you're looking at them. Part of you wants to, "Oh, fuck off, you don't know what I'm going through here." But another part of you is like, "Oh, they're really trying to encourage me here, you know, and fair play to them." It does help, you know.
13 is halfway, and that's Tower Bridge. I'm going to let people hear what this sounds like. Tower Bridge should be the most joyous moment of the race, bar the finish. Instead, for me, I'm in full panic mode.
It's Tower Bridge. Inferno. The knee is screaming.
This was definitely my most panicked, because I can remember crossing that bridge the year before and feeling like my feet weren't hitting the ground, feeling like, I have got this. I cannot believe I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do it easy. Sonia, the real darkness sets in at kilometre 24. And, I mean, it's... like, I don't know. Like, I don't. I feel like you're not somebody that gets very. Are you somebody that gets very down? Have you had periods of down, like, in your life? But I certainly have a difficulty. Maybe it's an Irish man thing. I've gotten very down on yourself, like calling yourself names and stuff. And that's the only thing I can relate this to. And what was funny was we were actually in a tunnel when this happens. A Lucozade cup is stuck to my foot and I have to stop to take it off, and I am calling myself all kinds of names. Steve will attest to this, that this was when I first thought about ringing you and ringing Vinny and going, "Do you think I should just stop?" What would you have said if I'd rang you in that tunnel?
Well, you know, I mean, I think if you've got something pretty sore, you know, that you don't feel comfortable running with from 5 miles, that's like, you know, you've got 4/5 of the race to go.
Mm.
You know, I would definitely consider stopping and not being able to do it. But, you know, you just have to weigh up, what's the benefit? What's the
harm?
You know, what's the harm? Like, what's the worst thing that's going to happen at the end of this race? And, you know, you don't know. Is this like an injury that, okay, if I stop now, I can fix it in a week. If I keep going now, I may tear something, I may break something. You know, I may not be able to run for a few months. So it depends on how rational you can be with yourself and, you know, what you value the most. That's going to decide the thing for you.
Pain is just a French word for bread.
Like, I know when I ran in Boston, and you know, I was flying along, and then I got to the point where I could hardly run and I was walking, and I definitely had to talk myself through the last 6 miles of the race. But I didn't have an injury, I just had like muscle soreness.
Yeah.
So I wasn't worried that I wasn't going to be able to walk or run the next day.
Yeah.
You weigh it all up, and then you kind of, you just break it down into small pieces. So when I had 6 miles to go, I was saying, okay, that's 2 times 3 miles, 6 times 1 mile, 3 times 2 miles. And you just break it into small pieces, and you take it one section at a time and make it a little bit more manageable, because, you know, that day I was determined to finish. And, you know, you obviously had it in your head that, you know, I'm finishing this thing, so I've got to manage how I'm going to do this and how I'm going to rationalize this with myself.
That's exactly what Steve did. I think I mentioned it in my text to you there. But he basically said, at 24, we're in our worst state. And I had said, you know, I think the sentence I say to him, and you can hear it on the watch, is, let's stop this fucking around now. let's get to 30. And actually try and run the pace that we were meant to be running and going, right, well, what would happen if even in all this pain I tried to run 5:20 pace? And sure enough, we get to 32 kilometers, only 10k to go, and the pain's disappeared. Like, the pain is like it never occurred. I am hammering along down Canary Wharf with tears in my eyes, going, we're going to fucking do this. And, you know, this is the whole journey of the marathon, isn't it? That it not only is it a big road to travel, but internally, you travel a distance emotionally, don't you? You have all kinds of thoughts. I watched a Tom Hanks video before I got out on the course, where he said the one thing he wished he knew before he started his career was that this too will pass. And that those words were in my ears, that whatever is going on in your head in the marathon, that's going to pass. Whether it's I'm feeling amazing or I'm feeling terrible, that's going to pass as well, right?
Everybody, no matter what level you're at, it becomes difficult at some point, and they have to question themselves, because, you know, that's, there can't be many people who are actually running a marathon who go through it seamlessly and don't have one doubt as they're going along that they may not get to the finish, or they may not get to the finish as fast as they intend to get there, and they have to adjust and adapt things. And, you know, you often hear even the elite athletes, they go through bad patches, and you live in hope that you're going to, you know, you're going into a tunnel or you're riding a wave and you're going to come out the other side and, you know, start to feel good again.
We're coming down Canary Wharf at this point, and you can hear the crowds.
Yeah.
They are losing their shit. Like, it's like when you're hearing them, like a football crowd, it's like they knew what was happening.
Yeah.
It's but isn't it like they've been watching it?
isn't it like electric voltage going through your body?
It washed down. I could feel it washing down my face, like somebody had a sponge over my face.
Yeah.
And I looked across at Steve, and my eyes were full of tears. And he was like, hold it together, we'll need all this. We're going to need all this.
Yeah.
I had a tennis ball in my throat trying to hold it all back. Because I've now gone from stopping and ringing my coach to
elation
and running the race I wanted to run. And not just that. This is the killer. At 32, 34. We're now on 34 kilometers. Less than 10 to go. I'm like, I have a lot in the tank here, because I guess you are hedging your bets when you're in that kind of pain, aren't you?
Yeah, and you're starting to think, Jesus, I might do all right here.
Yes, 100%. I mean, I definitely was out the other side at 36k when I feel like a twang, like somebody strumming a guitar wrong is how I would describe the pain that went up my leg at that moment. And, you know, you sense the jig is up. It's like watching a movie where you're like, oh, he's Kaiser Soze. You know, it was him all along. Your leg wasn't going to feel great the whole way to the line. And at 38, there was just no way. It wouldn't bend, and it wouldn't. There was no power. That it was like that engine of the plane was off.
We're at 38k. Right under my hotel room, at the Westin Hotel, and the knee basically said, "Sorry, Jar, that's the end of your day." Now I took two more Nurofen, and I'm walking, and good old Steve Daly here is walking beside me. But I guess this is another marathon story, isn't it?
And you know, Sonia, then you're in a different race. Like, you see all the pacers pass by. You see 3:45 go by, 3:40. 3:30's long gone. You're seeing four-hour pacers there. And now it's like there's a wave of people that go by that are really obsessed with getting their times. And I'll be honest with you, Sonia, they don't look like they're having that much crack. Then there's a wave that come along who are equally not having as much crack, going a lot slower, but all of them know the closer they get to the line, there's a happiness that's waving over them. I don't know, it's like the wave is hitting them much slower. They're enjoying this. They just seem to be enjoying it a lot more. They're running for charities. They're not club runners. They are people who have taken on the London Marathon. And in that way, Sonia, I think I got a view of the London Marathon that I never would have got if I just run it to pace, crossed the line, collected my medal, and gone for a sandwich. This side of the thing, like, it is kind of what London Marathon's about, isn't it? Those runners.
They are probably the vast majority of the whole race is made up of, you know, people who are running for lots of different charities, lots of different reasons. And, you know, they've broken it down into how they're going to get to the finish line. And yeah, some will be on a pace for something, but others will be on a pace because they know that's the pace that they can survive. That's the one they can get there.
I said to Steve, I said, keep going. You just go. And he said to me in that moment, that is the worst idea that we've had all day. And to his credit, like, he is the hero of this, because
he couldn't have left you, like.
Yeah, well, it was full Maverick. I'm not leaving my wingman. I was Goose and I was dying.
I'm not leaving my wingman.
And it was not going to happen. And people of London immediately are like, mate, you can do it. Get going. Keep going.
No.
And I'm like, my leg won't bend. Like, I can't bend my leg. Now, it's straight legged. One leg is being hauled along here. But you do. You make 8 attempts to go again.
Yeah.
And each time is more painful.
For a long time, it looked like you were, you know, going for sub 4 hours. And it, you know, it wasn't until very close to the end that it looked like, you know, you were taking a bit longer to finish than you should have been taking.
I did have those thoughts in my head, because I can remember Dublin when the wheels came off there for different reasons, that, you know, people go, and then your dot stopped moving. you're just a dot. And, you know, within all of those dots are all of these stories, like guys running because their granddad died and he ran it. Guys who've lost their kids to suicide, you know, people, other kidney care runners who were out there that I saw, their cheer squad. I bumped into the old people I used to train with in St. Albans. And because I was now trotting and walking, I was able to go over and give them all a hug and say hello to the LSA crew who were out there from Dunabate. Like, I don't know, it was simultaneously the most glorious and miserable experience of my life. It was just so perfect that, like, there's Tina standing next to Kelly Holmes, Dame Kelly Holmes, on the sideline, pumping her fist at us going up the mall at a snail's pace, but happier than I've ever been crossing a line. It's just kind of magic. It was kind of the magic of the whole thing that makes you kind of go, I wouldn't have it any other way.
We did it.
You did it, buddy. Well done.
We did it. Thank you so much for your service.
Of course.
Well done. Good job. Well done. Steve up. Oh, man. Your legs. Post-race analysis there from Steve Daly. An absolute odyssey, you'd have to say.
look, what a journey. And crossing the finish line together was success, man. Success.
Pushing it through, like, it's definitely a lesson in that thing of this too will pass. Because even when the wheel came off completely, we still got to finish strong up the straight at the end. It was magical.
You know, we just flew. We flew.
Thank you so much for everything, Steve.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Appreciate it. Love it.
Gratitude is the overriding feeling once you're over that line. I think everyone can relate to that.
Sometimes with the marathon, the main battle is actually getting to the starting line, never mind the finish line. You know, so the first battle is getting to the starting line, then the second battle is getting to the finish line, you know?
100%.
And, you know, and I don't think you really, when you did London last year, it just kind of happened for you, and you just trained and, yeah, I'm going to do London, great. Oh, just did the London Marathon, happy days. I don't think it enters your mind that, geez, this can be a real struggle on some days, do you know? And I think Dublin was an indication of that. And then,
yeah, well, my life changed. I know that. And I think that when we talk about coaching marathons on this show and we talk about work-life balance and Sonia talks about getting a journal and, you know, getting out early in the day, you know, if somebody gets a job that just does not allow for them to train, there are certain jobs that do not allow you to train for a marathon. And I would say in the last year, my job has been one of those jobs, weirdly. But somehow I got there.
And look, I'm not going to lie. It's hit me in the last few months that, right, this is a bit different to last year. Like, Jarla has a lot more on his plate. He's late night gigs and he's traveling a lot and he's doing a lot of stuff behind the scenes. And I'm more aware now, geez, like, you know, it's not so clear cut, like, right, there's your schedule. That, you know, there was a lot of tweaking and changing the plan the last 6 months, and it didn't really go ideally because for loads of different reasons, and I think they're actually good reasons, you know,
with your life and
your work and loads of different things. You know, it's not like you didn't do certain long runs because you were lazy or because you were sick or injured. It was just other stuff takes over, and that's just life. Do you know what I mean? So, like, I'm incredibly proud of you doing that yesterday.
Well, thank you, Vinny, and thank you, Sonia. It does raise the question, what's next? You know, what's on the horizon? Tina's delighted to think that there isn't going to be a marathon on the horizon. But I did meet one man who wanted to argue otherwise. And his name is Pete Riley, and he works for New Balance.
I'm here. The 1981 suite. Pete Riley from New Balance, the man who got me in here. Man, thank you so much for having us here.
You're very welcome. Very welcome.
Not a lot of people know this, but you used to room with Vinnie Mulvey.
Vinnie Mulvey, the man, yeah. He always claims he's a dub, but he's really not quite from Dublin, you know?
Well, listen, this has been I don't know how you do it and how you organise it. There's so many layers to it. We were talking about the experience that I had today. It must be so hard for you watching New Balance athletes out there when you no longer can control what they're going through.
Yeah, so, you know, as a former athlete or even a fan of the sport, you have no control. Like, when I used to run, you control your own destiny. When you're watching your friends and your family and whoever it is compete, you just don't see it. You have no control of that.
Yeah.
And it's
stressful.
It's emotionally draining.
Yeah.
Like, I ran this, my first time I ran this race was 2006, and I cried at the finish line.
No.
I did, honestly.
Oh my God.
And then you sit here watching all these people run it for multiple reasons, whether it's charity, whether it's to get a time, whatever. It's emotional. It's really emotional.
It so is. And you know what? I think that New Balance and the way they've got this set up here and the way their messaging around it is, they get it.
Yeah.
They have to.
I think we do things very differently as a brand compared to our competitors. You know,
competitors,
I think we think things a little bit differently, but essentially it's you're trying to capture that emotional journey for what everyone's going through, and we want to be like that partner on that journey for a lot of people. So,
well, the "we run together" mantra of this race is like very close to our own podcast mantra, which is "run together while we're apart." That's what Sonia does. She brings people together through her legend. But there is a togetherness in this today, because there's no way I finish without that crowd and those runners going, keep going.
But I mean, you spend what? 12, I mean, you spend 12 weeks, 8 weeks, 4 weeks. You commit to this journey, right? To run a marathon. And you're not going to drop out. You're not going to do it, no matter what.
Well, it's never an option.
And the nice thing about marathons, it's like, if you commit to it, you commit to do it. It doesn't matter whether it's you're going to run it in 3 hours or 5 hours. It's like, you can walk, you can jog, you take the crowd and enjoy the experience. Like, and I ran the last 2 years with my wife, and her first one went terrible. Like, she had a nightmare, she hated it. She said, "I'm never doing a marathon again." Guess what? Signs up for the following year, does it again.
And this then, is why you put the ballot out yesterday. This is the time.
Because no matter what, people want to do it again. When you go on that journey to run a marathon, you commit to it, and you're like, "I will never do that ever again." And all of a sudden, I try and compare it to like pregnancy for women, you know? They go, "I'm never."
Got it.
I would swear, "I'm never doing that again." Yeah. And then within a year, like, "Let's have another one."
Yeah. You forget the bad stuff. Like.
You completely forget about it, because you're like, you get hooked on the journey, you get hooked in the, like, I'm sitting on the finish line watching all these people finish. I'm like, I'm running this next year.
Wow, well, listen, man, thank you so much for the chat, and thank you so much for having us.
You're welcome.
You're a gent. We'll see you in New York.
Definitely.
And we'll do something then as well. Thanks a lot.
Marathon is a story. Like, this is a race with a story behind it. It's a race that exists because of a very unusual story. And everyone who runs it has theirs. I got a new one this time around, and I know that story doesn't begin without you, Vinny. So thank you so, so much for opening the book and, creating the chapters. I loved every minute of the ride, and I may not be doing a marathon for a while, but I bet it isn't the last story we tell together.
No, definitely not. And it's an honor to be able to contribute in whatever small way I can, you know. Like, you're the one doing the work at the end of the day. But, I've really enjoyed the ride as well and the journey. So we have a new journey planned ahead of us, and we've talked about that a little bit, and it doesn't involve marathon.
Yeah.
So that'll be something else to talk another day about. So, look, well done again. And we'll talk soon, okay?
Thanks a lot, Vinny. I have to give you a massive shout out, Sonia, for the incredible after experience that we had when we had described in last year's podcast the Saving Private Ryan lorries and sandals situation of people attempting to put on their trousers lying on the side of the road. You put us in a situation in the 1981 suite, it was called, from New Balance, with Pete Riley showing us to hot showers and
oh my god,
hot showers, massages, pasta, and free champagne.
You totally avoided the war zone beyond the finish line.
It was ridiculous. We met everybody in there, including Kat Deely, the aforementioned Joel Dommett, Dame Kelly Holmes sitting right beside Tina, and we just had the best ending to this thing. And honestly, I needed all the TLC I could get. But Sonia, there has to have been races where you thought to yourself, "I don't think I want to run that distance again."
Definitely the marathon was one where I was like, "No, I'm not doing that again." And, you know, I think you eventually come to terms with it and you forget about it. And then you start to like plan maybe the next marathon. Even though for me, there was definitely years between attempts. I definitely wasn't someone who got hooked on the marathon. And it was a big challenge every time, even though every time I did want to run better and think I could be better at it. But I never really managed to master the marathon. I was too far before all those fancy shoes that would propel you along a little bit better. But yeah, I mean, if you saw the shoes that we used to run the marathon in, and probably before I was running the marathon, people probably ran in even like leaner shoes. They were basically, you know, like slippers.
Yeah.
You would put them on and you would feel like you were, you know, walking around the house at home. They were really just like very thin slippers and very comfortable, you know, until you had about 24 miles on them and had two more to go.
I can imagine, but then I can't, because, you know, I had a stack height of, I think it was illegal, the stack Which, height
what,
I had.
What shoes did you wear?
Well, I actually went in the Adidas Adi Zero, Adios Pro 3s is what I went in. But in previous years, I'd gone in the Primex, which is definitely an illegal shoe for a pro to use, which is a stack height of 50 millimeters. But a world record in the women's race, Sonia, like, that's very meaningful, right? Especially without any pacers, any male pacers in the race. Do you think that that is a record that we'll see beaten again and again, or is that one going to stand?
No, it gets beaten every year, practically, that record, because it's not as fast as the ultimate world record. So, I mean, they still have pacemakers up to a certain point.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, she's definitely wearing the super shoes here. She's not.
I don't know where I got that from.
They whisk them away after the finish. The top three, they have to give their shoes to the there'll be some officials there, and they take them away and they examine the shoes to make sure that they're at the right standard.
Wow.
Interesting. The top three women were all wearing Adidas, and two out of three men were wearing Adidas, and Bikili, he was wearing some Skechers, maybe.
No way. Some Skechers. Yeah. Mom shoes. Yeah. Fair play to him.
He's nearly the same age as you, I think.
41 years old, I believe. He's nearly the same age as me. What an age that is to be running those kind of times. Do you think there's more ahead of him, or is this really his apex?
Well, he's hoping to get picked for the Ethiopian team for the marathon at the Olympics. So,
wouldn't see why I mean, not.
He's definitely put his mark out there. And, there's a good chance he'll do as well as anybody else, you know, for Ethiopia in the marathon, because it's unlikely to be a super fast race in Paris, because there's a few undulations there and it'll be a typical, you know, tactical type race at the Olympics.
In the meantime, Sonia, we have to go and dream it all up again. We'll have to reveal what our plan is for the next challenge, or what we're going to do in the coming year. But definitely, it is exciting to think of not having to do all these long runs, to get back to roaming the country, doing some park runs, trying to get that 5K time below 19, if that's possible, and kind of get back to some speed. Are you looking forward to this as much as I am?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's definitely a more manageable challenge. It's definitely more time efficient to, you know, work on the shorter distances, and maybe you can figure out there may be some weaknesses there that you need to work on in your knee and different areas to build up some strength. You might have to put a little bit of time in there. But I think, yeah, you should definitely enjoy summer running and having fun, you know, around the country, finding fun races to do and not putting yourself under pressure to have to be out there running, you know, long kilometers before, during and after races.
Well, I want to give a quick shout out to one particular race, actually. John Buckley Sports have their own 5K race coming up, don't they? Very, very, very soon. It's May 21st, I think it takes place. And you can get entries at johnbuckleysports.com, I think is the place to go. What do you know about this race yourself, Sonia? Will you be around for it? Is the other question I want to ask you.
I won't be around. Unfortunately, I miss a lot of the really good, fun races in May. The John Buckley 5K is a long, the marina and down, I think, by Parky Creeve, is very, very flat. A very popular route for people to run because it is so flat. And yeah, the people go there to get their fast times. And it's one of these summer evening races that there are so many of them around, particularly around Cork. I'm sure there's probably many around the country as well. The first one last Thursday evening was in Ballantotas, a 4 mile road race that is really good fun and people love it. They started it many years ago to raise funds for a community hall, and now they get easily over 1,000 runners on some very small country roads.
Wow.
People just love it.
Yeah, well.
So, you know, there is a lot of, like, oh, actually, the other race that I miss in May that I've never been here for that I would really love to be sometime is the Photo Wildlife, the Cheetah Run.
Ah, yeah, for Eagle, the Eagle Club. Yes. Set up. If you've got a 5K or a shorter race that you want us to shout out on the show, why not get in touch, irishmanabroadpodcast@gmail.com, because we can line them all up and try and get as many of you guys out, meet up, have the run, and then have the cup of tea afterwards. It'd be a lot of fun. I got to get this knee sorted, Sonia.
Yeah, where do you think, realistically, what do you think it's like? Something's going to take a while, or you think it's manageable fairly soon?
I think it's manageable very soon, personally, because I believe Vinny, and also I sense an improvement in it today. So thank God for that. I'll definitely be switching between the ice and the Epsom salts at the moment and getting a lot of movement back into it. And like you say, I just have to strengthen these things. I mean, maybe that'll be a part of our show, is working on this gym work, getting in there and getting a little bit of strength and conditioning done each week. Maybe that could have avoided. Maybe that's the thing that came back to bite me in the ass, is we didn't get into the gym, didn't get that work done, and you pay the price. I've definitely got one of those marathon stories that I'll cherish for the rest of my life if I never run another one again. I want to say a very, very big thank you to you, Sonia, to Vinny, to Tina, to everybody who's been in touch, and all of the people who have donated over at the TCS London Marathon page. There's still time to donate. At the moment, the figure stands at £5,105. I'm just looking down here through some of the donations received. Owen Fegan, Susan Brady, Deirdre Hannon, Fiona van der Meer, Cara and Simon Egan, Natalie Gray. I could keep going. There, Louise Atchison. There's so many beautiful messages and donations coming from the listeners of this show. I really, really appreciate it. And that money will go a long, long way. Sonia, thank you so much for this episode as well. And what have you got lined up this week?
I've preparation for departure. There's a flight coming up. I'm going to the Penn Relays this weekend, and then I'll be back to Oregon for a few weeks. But because the weather has been so nice, there's been a lot of procrastination here with packing and sorting. So it may be a last minute effort to get myself ready to get out the door on Thursday. But yeah, that's kind of my week will be, I suppose, geared towards that.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think you definitely need to get to the root of the problem, good diagnosis, and find the cause, and then work with that before diving back in. Absolutely. To a summer of running. Absolutely. maybe we'll get you swimming in the sea.
I love swimming in the sea, for sure. I'm up for it. Sonia, thanks again. We'll talk to you really soon.
Talk to you soon.
The dust has settled, the knee has been iced. Myself and my wingman, Steve Daly, he'd be the maverick of this scenario, because I'm definitely goose and I definitely died out there today. It's hard to put into words exactly how good and bad it was out there today, because it was everything the marathon is meant to be. There's no way I get home without the people that were cheering, the support you gave me, Steve. I think I would have just walked away, but there was absolutely no way that you were going to walk off. What is that to you? Like, is that the centre of marathon running? I mean, you've run quite a few.
I think marathon running is a lot about the support that we give each other and get.
you know, we give ourselves support and then we get supported by so many people, our friends and our family. And I think that brings us closer together. And I think, to me, that's the most important thing.
And it definitely makes sense as to why people do this stupid thing. People are the whole time going, why would you do that? It can't be because 42 kilometres feels good. It definitely feels good crossing the line. But it's the together. It's the together of it. And New Balance, just like I was saying to Pete there, they got it. We run together. And that's how this story ends. We ran together, and as a result of that, we finished together. So a massive, massive thanks. Steve, I'll never, ever be able to put into words how grateful I am. Thanks to Vinny Mulvey for all the training plans all the way through, for needling the shite out of my leg this week. I mean, how bad would it have been without those needles? To Sonia O'Sullivan, to all of the Irishman Running Abroad crew, the WhatsApp groups, the people that donated to Kidney Care UK this week in your droves. I got a full heart and a sore leg. And I'm sure this won't be the last time we talk about it. Steve, thanks again.
Thank you. Cheers.
One of the keys to like maintaining your brain mass is pushing past that comfortable zone physically, you know, exercise-wise.
Eamon Coughlin on his way to a major title for the first time in his life. The champion of the world.
Imagine, you know, a world where everybody could go out the door and engage in the kind of exercise that's going to make them more relaxed, more healthy, burn off stress,